And that would lead then to actually usage of hydrogen in swap form for aircraft like the Zuri. So Zuri will be, if you want, the third step. It's like stages on a rocket. You know, the first one would be very much the fleet renewal, second stage, the SAF, and then there will be the Zuri hydrogen powered, very much like on the Saturn V that used the hydrogen on its third stage. But on Zuri, really, we think we have really good climate credentials with hydrogen.
Welcome to Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. I'm your host, Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simply Flying. Every Thursday, I have important conversations with top aviation executives, technology entrepreneurs, and policymakers helping aviation take climate action. Conversations that help separate the signal from the noise. Whether you are a frequent flyer or an airline executive, if you care about sustainability or simply love traveling, welcome aboard. My guest today is Bertrand Listeme. Bertrand has tremendous experience working with airlines around the world, and he's bringing this to the Zero E team to rethink how we can fly in the future. Bertrand and I have a fantastic conversation on how a large company like Airbus innovates for a project that's so far out into the future and makes it a reality today for the team and for its customers. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Bertrand. So Bertrand, it's really good to be speaking with you. You are leading Net Zero Airlines. I didn't know that such a role at Airbus existed. What exactly do you do?
Maybe Shashank, if you allow me, I'll start by presenting the big picture in terms of how Airbus wants to help its customers and aviation globally to reach its targets of net zero by 2050. We think that to achieve that, we will need to use a basket of measures, meaning that there will not be just one single silver bullet. The very first measure should be the fleet renewal. It means that today you have an in-service fleet composed of about 80% of aircraft that could be actually renewed with latest generation jets. Yeah. The second one will be to improve the operations and the air traffic management procedures so that we can as well gain a few percent and reduce our CO2 emissions. Third one would be SAF, the sustainable aviation fuels. Then will come the Zuri, the hydrogen-powered aircraft we'll talk about, and then as well the carbon removals. And actually, I take this opportunity, as you're based in British Columbia, we're partnering with Carbon Engineering, based in Squamish, British Columbia, who is developing a direct air capture technology. We've invested into Carbon Engineering end of last year, and in conjunction with 1PointFive, who is developing sequestration and project development in the United States with Carbon Engineering, we are actually offering a negative emissions, a carbon removal solution to airlines as well. So you see, we think that at Airbus, if we want to be a leader, we have actually to offer solutions to allow our customers to decarbonize their operations.
This is very interesting, and yes, indeed, they're my neighbors down the road in Squamish, the folks at Carbon Engineering, and we're in touch with them as well. How's your role different from the really smart folks working on Zero E concept, or does that fall within your purview as well?
Yeah, so I'm part of the Zero E team. I'm very grateful to be part of it, and I look after what we call the market and customers team. So looking at what the market could look like in the future for hydrogen-powered aircraft, which is the Zuri. And as well, we are really keen to hear from our customers what that aircraft should look like, especially in terms of showstoppers, no-goes, what we absolutely have to be on board the aircraft. And also customers are partners of choice to develop what we call the ecosystem, meaning that, as you know, Shashank, with this project, we have, in fact, two key foundations. Number one, the hydrogen-powered aircraft itself, and we look after this. Number two, the hydrogen supply, the economy, to ensure that when this aircraft enters the market in 2035, we can actually feed that fleet with green hydrogen at airports. So we have really to, if you want, make sure that we create hydrogen hubs, hydrogen consortiums to provide green hydrogen at entry into service.
So let's dive right into this, right? You are working with EasyJet right now, I believe, to establish a hydrogen hub at Bristol Airport. How is this going to work? Give us a vision of how exactly is your partnership with EasyJet and then Bristol Airport going to take life to bring this hydrogen hub to reality.
Yes, absolutely. So this is a really good example of the hydrogen consortium. We are really lucky to be partnering with EasyJet, Bristol Airport, Hynamics from the group EDF, and Hydrogen Southwest to look at what a hydrogen hub could look like at Bristol Airport so that we could start hydrogen-powered Zero operations as early as 2035. Yeah. So the idea is really to look at the entire, if you want, process, the entire value chain. How do you get the green hydrogen? How do you produce it? As you know, in order to be actually a green hydrogen, we look at hydrogen made from water electrolysis when using renewable electricity. So we're looking at this with partners like Hynamics. Then we will want to have the green hydrogen at the airport. So Bristol Airport is partnering, is bringing its bit in this partnership for this. And then, of course, EasyJet is really acting as a catalyst to bring all those partners around the same table so that we can start planning zero emission operations at the Bristol Airport.
One of the things, I'm jumping around here, but this is so interesting. One of the things when we speak about to airport CEOs, or I had the Director General of ACI, Luis Felipe, on this podcast previously, is when airports look to develop hydrogen infrastructure, they have to change a lot of things. Just the storage of hydrogen is huge. You need to build, I think, a terminal the size of Heathrow Terminal 5 to store hydrogen. How is this going to be built, this infrastructure to manage hydrogen?
It's a really key question. Thanks, Shashank. To address it, we have a concept called hydrogen hubs at airports. The key idea is really that we think that by adopting green hydrogen as early as today, airports can decarbonize their own operations because you would have plenty of consumers, what we call the off-takers, at the airport. The airport vehicles, the ground service equipment, ground transportation, buses, coaches, heavy-duty trucks, logistics, heat, power, air conditioning for the facilities in the vicinity of the airport. And then progressively, you could have a ramp-up so that you will have a sufficient supply to feed a zero fleet from 2035. So you see, we think of that synergy where green hydrogen could be used by the airport in the first place with a progressive ramp up to a low zero operations from 2035. And in that respect, if I may, we've actually publicized such a consortium that we created with Air New Zealand and Christchurch Airport in February. We have as well in this partnership Fortescue Future Industries providing the green hydrogen and also Heringa and Fabrum, two New Zealand companies working in cryogenics and hydrogen distribution. So luckily, the case we have with EasyJet and Bristol is actually spreading with other hubs being created worldwide.
This is very encouraging, the work that's going on. I've been reading about the work with Air New Zealand and Christchurch, of course, around the hydrogen hubs. Why hydrogen? Let's zoom out a little bit. Why hydrogen versus, let's say, Boeing, which says it's SAF plus or SAF and? Or if you look at the big bet from Embraer around Energia platform, which is primarily electric and hybrid with other things. Why is Airbus betting so big on hydrogen?
Yeah, it is a big challenge because that basket of measures, it's easy for me to say, but it is a challenge to implement. So we're really aware of this. If you want, we think that the Airbus strategy for sustainability, the basket of measures, you could call it an AND strategy, meaning fleet renewal and SAF and Zuri. So very clearly, we think that sustainable aviation fuels, fleet renewal are key ingredients to reach net zero. Then there will be Zuri as well. Why hydrogen? Well, we're having this discussion, very frankly, because of something called climate change. We have to be really clear about this. And we think that hydrogen, because it emits no carbon dioxide during operations, if this is green hydrogen, is actually having excellent climate credentials, potentially as well, really good in terms of non-CO2 effects. You know, the nitrogen oxides, NOx, especially if we use fuel cells, there will be no NOx. And persistent controls, and we want to carry out some tests, and we can talk about this in a minute. So the first point is really the climate credentials, the key reason why we are developing this ambition for Zuri. The second point is the declining costs. You will see that more and more sectors are actually adopting green hydrogen as a fuel for the future. So we think that by doing this, we will reduce the cost thanks to economies of scale, meaning that this could be really a really affordable driver for airlines to decarbonize their operations. We sometimes speak of a carbon abatement cost, really competitive, or cost per ton of CO2 avoided. Yeah. The third reason is that hydrogen is really energy dense. It carries, if you want, three times the amount of energy of kerosene per unit of weight, meaning that you have what we call specific energy of 33,000 watts per kilogram with hydrogen, where kerosene has one of 12,000 watts per kilogram. And then we think that hydrogen will play a central role in decarbonizing aviation because it can be used in three different manners. So in its raw form for combustion and fuel cells. And also a third way is to produce sustainable aviation fuels called power-to-liquid synthetic fuels, which is obtained when you mix green hydrogen with captured carbon. And we think at Airbus that overall, to reach net zero by 2050, hydrogen will contribute up to 50% when you take the three levers together.
This is very interesting. I like the fact around the energy density of hydrogen, but it's really voluminous. You have to rethink airplane design. You can't have the traditional tube and wing design. You have to think about hydrogen transportation. You can't have any leaks. You have to think about hydrogen storage. There are so many new things to think about. Isn't that a very tough challenge to pursue?
It is. It is. And we are really, we want to be really ambitious because we want to play a role in reducing our impact on climate, but we have to be very humble. And there are challenges with hydrogen. As you very rightly said, volume is the one of the very first challenges we're having. We have this really good energy density per unit of weight, but you might know that liquid hydrogen, which is the one we're looking at because we can carry the biggest amount of energy per unit of volume, a liquid hydrogen is really has really low density. It's a density of 7% compared to water. It means that in one cubic meter, you would have only 71 kilos of liquid hydrogen, where you would have one ton of water. So it gives you an idea. It is quite a different, if you want, paradigm. And when you combine, if you want, the energy density per unit of weight and volume, at the end, to have the same amount of energy as kerosene, you need four times the volume with liquid hydrogen. Hence, the challenges you mentioned on board the aircraft and on the ground, leading us to rethink the way we design the aircraft. A quick example is the fuel location on the aircraft. We look at double-wall vacuum-insulated tanks for liquid hydrogen, because liquid hydrogen means having a temperature of minus 253 degrees Celsius, so it's not even cold. It's what we call cryogenic. And in order to keep hydrogen in this liquid state, we look at double wall vacuum insulated tanks, which have a shape of a cylinder, meaning that we won't store hydrogen this time in the wings of the aircraft anymore. We look at solutions where we store it in the rear of the fuselage, because the location is, if you want, imposed by the shape of the cylinder or the shape of the tank. We can't have a cylinder in the wing. That wouldn't work in terms of the drag we would induce on the aircraft design. So key changes, number one, making sure we have low carbon green hydrogen, liquid hydrogen, that means temperature of -253 and degrees Celsius, so that's -424 degrees Fahrenheit, I should say. And then also it means that we will require four times the volume to have the same amount of energy as kerosene. So that's why we're looking at variants of either 200 seats or 100 seats to begin operations, because we think that we can cope actually with the volume challenge for that aircraft capacity.
Would this work in a traditional tube and wing aircraft, like an Airbus A320XLR, or will you need a blended wing design? What does this mean in terms of airplane design?
We love the blending wing body design. It drew a lot of attention, a lot of coverage, and we love that. We are working on the blending wing body, and we think it has a great potential because of that space challenge, that volume challenge that we have. The blending wing body, if you want, offers that possibility to store hydrogen in large amounts and in large volumes. And if you want, for that reason, the blending wing body is really attractive. And I should say that the trade you have with hydrogen-powered blending wing body is better than the one you have with the kerosene-powered, because you don't need that volume with kerosene. It would be like empty space. We can use it with hydrogen. However, introducing the blending wing body as our first Zuri, as our first hydrogen-powered aircraft, would mean that we would have two big disruptions at once. Number one, a new energy type, hydrogen instead of kerosene. Number two, a different aircraft configuration. So that's probably too much to chew at once, which is why for the first variant, we are most likely to stick with the tube and wing configuration you just described. Either a turboprop aircraft with 100 seats or a turbofan aircraft with 200 seats.
And I've seen some of these concepts in the Zero-E aircraft program, of course, during the Airbus Summit that was done last year. Now,
absolutely.
Let's go back into the practical side of things. You have been working very closely with EasyJet and Rolls-Royce as well. What does that collaboration actually look like? When will I be able to fly a hydrogen aircraft, let's say from Toulouse to Geneva, which is a route I often used to fly on EasyJet, actually?
Yeah. So EasyJet is really one of the very first airlines to have signed a partnership with us to create this joint research project on hybrid and electric powered aircraft as early as November 2019. So at the time, if you want, the focus was really on electric powered aircraft and hybrid, because we hadn't announced our ambition about hydrogen yet. Then in September 2020, during the Zero Emission Day, we announced our ambition on hydrogen. And very naturally, we kept partnering with EasyJet, very glad to be partnering with them. And our focus then moved really to hydrogen, leading to some achievements like the Bristol Hydrogen Consortium. With EasyJet as well, the airline kindly invited us to contribute to the creation of their net zero roadmap. So we are very proud of that collaboration and to have been invited. As you know, the net zero roadmap is really the backbone of the sustainability strategy. And EasyJet revealed their net zero roadmap in September last year, September 2022. When you look at it, in fact, EasyJet's approach, it perfectly illustrates the basket of measures I was referring to earlier, meaning that EasyJet includes in its net zero roadmap the fleet renewal, the Zero-E and the disruptive technology with a hydrogen-powered aircraft, improving operations and air traffic management, but also the SAF and also the carbon removals. Actually, EasyJet signed a letter of intent to purchase carbon dioxide removals via us from carbon engineering and 1.5. So it shows really how forward-looking the airline is by really being keen to develop zero-emission technology and hydrogen-powered technology, and also thinking of how in the future the airline can neutralize the residual emissions, the emissions that are really hard to get rid of, and that's the purpose of the carbon removals.
Right. So carbon removals complement whatever else is still being emitted. Now, EasyJet is no Singapore Airlines or KLM. EasyJet sells discount tickets at discount fares. What do you think will be the cost of a ticket? Will it remain the same? We have heard, for example, for sustainable aviation fuel, currently it is 3 times to 6 times the cost of jet A fuel. What will this do to cost if we start flying on hydrogen?
Yes, that's why it's so precious for us to be partnering with them. Because, you know, when you look at sustainability, it is very well known in the frame of climate. And certainly at Airbus, we care for climate. And as well, when you look at the definition like the one from the United Nations, there is as well the economic sustainability, meaning that we need to have an economy working well to sustain a population of 8 billion people. Yeah. And certainly we care for aviation and all the benefits that it brings to humankind by allowing us to connect physically. And having lived on 3 continents, it's certainly something I particularly cherish. Yeah. So you know that story, Shashank, but here it's key because it gives us actually a guidance about what the cost per ton of CO2 avoided should be with the hydrogen-powered aircraft. How do we ensure that we are competitive with our solution, that it should be one of the solutions of choice for airlines? So we use that metric, the cost per ton of CO2 avoided, sometimes cost per ton of CO2 equivalent avoided if you take into account the non-CO2 effects. And then it was really good to have an open discussion with EasyJet about where they would see the cost of such an aircraft, where they would see the cost of green hydrogen. And I think that the right way to look at it is really to say, okay, what should the price of green hydrogen be in the future so that a hydrogen-powered solution, a hydrogen-powered aircraft is actually affordable and makes sense from a commercial perspective. So I think it's really that approach of target setting that will help us actually to make hydrogen flight a reality. And we should be proactive here. It's, you know, we're not here just to predict the future. We're here to create it all together.
I love the fact that you say all together. And that's why I love how you're collaborating with the likes of Christchurch Airport, Bristol Airport, EasyJet, and Rolls-Royce. Tell us what exactly is happening with Rolls-Royce and what does that collaboration entail?
So as of today, we don't really have a direct cooperation with Rolls-Royce. What we see in the engine manufacturers' world is that we're really glad to see that they are looking at how to develop a hydrogen-powered gas turbine. So there are many projects. Today, we have not identified yet partners for our ZeroE if we decide to go for combustion, and maybe we can talk about it in a minute. So we don't have such a partnership in place yet, apart from a demonstrators program that we have for the hydrogen combustion pre-program, where we will fit actually a gas turbine on a flying test bench, which is an A380. You might have seen the pictures. And for that partnership, we are partnering with CFM International, and it's actually General Electric who will provide the gas turbine, the GE passport. So, yeah.
Okay, so it's multiple engine manufacturers you're working with. Now, we have spoken about the concepts. We have spoken about collaboration and potential customers. Let's talk about feasibility, because in aviation, we, of course, want to be practical as well. Airbus, if you recall, initially showcased an all-electric E-fan at Farnborough as long ago as 2014, which then evolved into a hybrid electric project. Do you still see electric or hybrid electric aircraft as viable or as an area of interest for Airbus?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We learned a lot with the EFAN. And when we say electric or hybrid electric, at the time, to be 100% clear for our audience, we looked at battery electric aircraft. Yeah. So we learned a lot because it was one of the first times for us when we actually used electric motors. It was fairly new to us. And we decided really to use hydrogen rather than battery electric because hydrogen offers the right power to weight ratio for the focus of the Zuri, which is a commercial airliner and Airbus aircraft. Yeah. So we learned a lot, but we think that we'll be able to carry much more energy with hydrogen based on the specific energy I mentioned earlier, you know, 3 times the energy of kerosene per unit of weight. Of course, you need to rethink the fuel system and the fuel storage system on board the aircraft. So that comes at a certain cost in terms of weight. But overall, we think we will have the best possible solution. So as well, if we decide to go for the combustion, we won't have the electric motors. But if we go fuel cells, which is one of the possibilities, we will actually benefit from all the learnings we've made on the EFAN with the electric motors. Yeah. And I might say as well, even if we go for a hydrogen combustion aircraft, the way you would produce actually the green hydrogen would be using renewable electricity in the first place. So you wouldn't have any electric motor on board the aircraft, you'd have a turbine, but would still need really this low carbon grid providing the low carbon green hydrogen. Yeah, so there will be a key role played by electricity.
Exactly. You can't have a coal power plant, for example, providing that hydrogen that defeats the whole purpose. What are some of the lessons you learned from the EFAN project that you're applying to your work in hydrogen, given that they were both pioneering?
Yeah, electric motors was really new to our engineers. We think we have some of the best engineers in the aerospace world. But it was entirely new, so it's good to be humble. We learned a lot about 2 things mainly. Now, number one, heat management, you know, how much heat is actually dissipated by an electric motor. So that was really new to us, the Joule effect. And then electromagnetic interference, because the beauty of the gas turbine is that there's no electronics into, if you want, the engine itself, so that you don't have such interference coming from the magnetic field. It's different with an electric motor, so that you really have to look at potential interference between the motors and the systems. So we learned a lot about this.
This cross-pollination of ideas, the same engineers perhaps who worked on the EFAN are maybe involved in some of these Zero E projects as well. I think that is so critical. You've, of course, been testing hydrogen engines under Project Blue Condor, which you announced at last year's Farnborough Airshow when I was there. Tell us a little about this, and why did you decide to start with glider tests?
Yeah, so the Blue Condor, in fact, is really a demonstrator to understand and measure, in fact, the non-CO2 effects of hydrogen combustion. So the Blue Condor is actually a glider fitted with a gas turbine, and we will want to fly side by side one glider that will be using kerosene and another one using hydrogen. Then behind the gliders, we will have a chase plane that will measure the non-CO2 effects, so nitrogen oxides and persistent contrails. And we're working actually with the German Aerospace Research Institute, the DLR, to carry out those tests. But if you want, with the Blue Condor, we're not testing so much the hydrogen combustion, the propulsion solution itself. It's more about understanding what it means for the non-CO2 effects when we combust hydrogen. What is happening? Today, we have models. We think that potentially we could have fewer NOx. Potentially, we could have fewer persistent contrails because there will not be any particulate matters ice can accrete to. But we really have to make the measurements to make sure that this possibility is a reality. And there's just one possibility here, is to test.
You're right. I think testing is absolutely critical. Now, from a glider to a real hydrogen aircraft, would you say to someone who questions how realistic this trajectory is that you can get from glider to full commercial flight in just 12 years from now?
It's a very good point. That's why we will want to actually have demonstrators both for the combustion of hydrogen and the fuel cells. For the combustion, so this is the gas turbine that will be fitting on the A380, our flying test bench, around the middle of this decade. And we will have, for that project, four liquid hydrogen tanks on the A380 that will fit the gas turbine to see how liquid hydrogen on board the aircraft behaves and how what it means as well to combust hydrogen. This is really new to us. You might know that it's been tested a while ago, in fact, in as early as 1957 by NACA and US Air Force on a B-57, a modified B-57 that had one engine running on hydrogen, and hydrogen was stored in liquid form. And as well, late 1980s on the Soviet era three-engine aircraft, the Tupolev 155. So it's been tested already. What we want to see what it means, especially when we look at commercial operations, right? This is not just an experiment. Our goal is to provide commercial operations, hydrogen-powered Zeri. And then for the fuel cells, we'll do, in fact, a bit of the same. We'll have one electric motor plus fuel cell fitted on an A380. We are looking at the megawatt scale, meaning that we are considering fuel cell stacks. That's pretty powerful. And this is the kind of magnitude of power that we will look at for a Zeri, should it be fuel cell powered, you see. So really, I would say the Blue Condor, it's about the non-CO2 effects, that's the smaller glider. And then for the real commercial application, we'll carry out tests on actually a flying A380. We selected the A380 because when you add the extra thrust, be it from the turbine or the fuel cell plus the electric motors, if you want from a flight dynamics perspective, the aircraft hardly feels the difference because it's a pretty stable machine, as you know.
Indeed. I'm glad to get some behind the scenes insight about testing as well, because we often on the outside don't exactly see how that's going to go. I'm going to ask you another question about hydrogen used in the aircraft. You'll be aware that there are some questions about the added weight required for an aircraft. In fact, I think it was the Hydrogen Science Coalition that estimated that there's a 15 to 40% payload restriction when you use liquid hydrogen compared to normal jet A fuel. Given that you're not piloting with that blended wing concept and you have to squeeze in hydrogen into the traditional tube and wing aircraft, how much of an issue do you foresee this payload reduction be? Because airlines like EasyJet want to carry full passengers and full cargo.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are really, if you want, two areas that we want to fully understand because we can give you an educated answer. The first one is the testing of the hydrogen on board the aircraft. So it's what I described earlier, be it for combustion and fuel cells. We will do it on an A380 flying test bench. The other key aspect is about the future improvements of technology. The task for engineers is really challenging because they have to come up with the best design for 2035 entry into service. And if you want, they have to take the state-of-the-art technology of today and as accurately as possible assess what the potential improvements could be, especially in terms of liquid hydrogen storage on board the aircraft, which will be both for the combustion and the fuel cells aircraft. And the other key aspect is the fuel cell technology. So to address this point, and these would lead, if you want, to the right answer to your initial question about potential extra weight. So to address the point on liquid hydrogen storage on board the aircraft. We've created zero emission development centers in the Airbus European countries. So we have some in the UK, Spain, Germany, and France, where they will look at tanks technology and also the cryogenics. And that will give us an understanding of what the weight of the double wall vacuum insulated tanks could be for our zero aircraft. On the fuel cells, we've actually created a joint venture with our German company called ElringKlinger, based in Stuttgart, with a lot of expertise in the automotive industry. And the name of our joint venture is Aerostack GmbH. And that will allow us to fully understand the potential of fuel cells, not just for today, but for the next decade, from 2030 to 2035, what can we achieve? There's a lot of development in the field of fuel cells for aviation. It's great. We see that as very encouraging signs. We support those initiatives, and we think they contribute to the development of the hydrogen ecosystem.
I love what you're saying about this medium to long-term vision of really rethinking aviation as we know it today. But the reality is, I've seen this from Airbus estimates and Boeing estimates. There are, I think, 20,000 aircraft in the air today, and there'll be 40,000 in the air by 2050, most of which are being built using today's technology. Hydrogen aircraft, blended wing, all of these new technologies will remain really niche on certain aspects. And that's why I believe Boeing is betting big on sustainable aviation fuel. Where do you fit in? Are you looking too far out in the future and not addressing this big elephant in the room, which is 40,000 planes that are going to be flying using current technologies?
The challenge is really to do both, you know. So we think really that fleet renewal is the number one thing to do, because 80% of the in-service fleet, those 20,000 planes you described, is to be replaced at some stage with better kerosene-powered technology. And by doing so, you can easily, with the Airbus family, you can actually get rid of pretty much 20% of the CO2 emissions. So that in itself is very significant. Then there will be the sustainable aviation fuels, be then based on biomass, the biofuels, or a bit later, the power to liquid synthetic fuels, which could be a really good way as well to create and stimulate the hydrogen value chain, right? And that would lead then to actually usage of hydrogen in straw form for aircraft like the Zuri. So Zuri will be, if you want, the third step. It's like stages on a rocket. You know, the first one would be very much the fleet renewal, second stage, the SAF, and then there will be the Zuri hydrogen powered, very much like on the Saturn V that used the hydrogen on its third stage. But on Zuri, really, we think we have really good climate credentials with hydrogen. And also we think that there is a fantastic momentum on green hydrogen. You look at heavy-duty trucks, you look at hydrogen-powered trains, the maritime industry, the buses. I come to work every morning on a hydrogen-powered bus, actually, provided by Airbus. So at Airbus, we walk the talk, and it's happening. So we have really to be aware of this new world of energy being built and make the most of it for our customers.
I'm so glad that you take a hydrogen-powered bus every day, because you know exactly what's happening. I know I was speaking with Edmonton Airport CEO, and he was talking about how they're preparing for a hydrogen future by having hydrogen-powered buses and cabs to the airport from Edmonton City. So this definitely helps. Now, you have personally had a very interesting career path, Bertrand, leading to what you're doing today. I remember, I think we have met previously in Dubai when you were leading airline marketing. You have worked with airlines around the world. Tell us, what exactly led you to your role today?
Yeah, thank you, Shashank. I'm very lucky to be with Airbus. I'm an aerospace engineer by background. I've studied in France and in the United States. And at Airbus, I've been working in engineering, commercial, and now strategy. I think there was a consciousness about climate change that was progressively permeating into me until maybe a turning point in the early 2020, actually in 2020, when I read NASA and NOAA report stating that the 2010 decade was the hottest ever. And it was also that harsh period when you had the wildfires in Australia. So I could see those two effects combined of increasing temperature and actually effects of climate change with an increased frequency and magnitude, certainly with the really hard wildfires that actually shook Australia at that time. So from that point, really, the die was cast, and I wanted to work on reducing and eliminating aviation's impact on climate. And I'm really grateful that Airbus offered me that opportunity, which I see as a responsibility with plenty of exciting challenges. And also, I cherish aviation for its wonderful people I've been working with for over 20 years, and for everything that aviation brings to society, to humankind, by connecting us physically. Yeah. So we are a hard to abate sector. And if we succeed, I think we will set an incredibly inspiring example for all the branches of the economy. So that's why we should really embrace this challenge.
I'm glad to hear the personal passion and motivation coming here. The last part of this interview is actually quite personal. It's called the rapid fire round. You have not seen these questions, but I'm going to ask you simple questions. You may be familiar if you've heard to this, listened to this podcast before. And you have to give me one word answers. And I'll start with something very simple. What's your favorite airline?
Ah, that's a really tough one. It's an airline operating the Zuri. In the future, you know.
All right, okay. Does not exist. Fine. I'll let you skip that one. We'll start with something simpler. What's your favorite book?
The Name of the Rose.
The Name of the Rose. Okay, I'm gonna look it up. Thank you. What's your favorite city?
Toulouse.
Okay. Well, have you been? I'm guessing you've been living in Toulouse for a long time.
Yeah. I studied here, and I've been living here on and off for about 20 years. Yeah, 25 years. Yeah.
Fantastic. What is something you want to learn?
I want to learn about climate, and I want to keep learning about climate, really, because I think it's just the beginning.
Okay. What is something you do in your free time?
I like riding my bike and playing drums.
Okay. I'm wondering why you don't ride your bike to work.
I do at times, really, when my agenda actually doesn't allow me to take the hydrogen-powered bus, you know.
Hopefully you can ride your bike back home after this interview. And drums, do you play drums in a band?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. On and off, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I love it. I think you're the first drummer we have had on this show. So welcome. We had a tango dancer recently, but this is going next level.
Wow.
What is the best advice you've received, Bertrand?
Well, I'd say keep learning. You know, it's so enriching. It brings us so much, really, when you understand better what goes on. I think that's really what leads us to make the right decisions. And I think, I don't know, I mean, it's not rapid fire mode anymore, but I think that's why we should really, really educate people about climate challenges and also educate them about what aviation brings to our society, because at times maybe we can be, I would say, a target, probably in a disproportionate manner. And I think we have to understand this and at the same time make a case about how we allow people to connect, what it means for our society, for the economy, exchanging ideas, spreading riches. There's a lot we're doing. It's probably harder to quantify than other sectors, but I'm keen to learn how we can transmit that in a more efficient manner.
I'm glad to hear. And finally, who do you look up to?
I think, and it might sound a bit corporate, but I think we're really lucky to have Guillaume Faury actually enabling a company like Airbus to provide sustainability-oriented solutions. It's not necessarily a given, you know. Had we thought about having this discussion, as you said, when we were both in Dubai, it would have been a big question mark, you know. And probably we would have thought that it was too early. But at Airbus, we want to make it happen. And I think it comes from, we have a really strong mandate coming from Guillaume itself.
Well, I'm glad to hear. Bertrand, it's been a pleasure speaking. Thank you for diving deep into the details and getting into the weeds of how hydrogen aircraft is becoming a reality. I'm incredibly excited about your partnership with EasyJet. I loved all the details we went into around the testing bit. And I am really looking forward to meeting you once again in person, hopefully very soon. Thank you.
Likewise. Many thanks, Shashank.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sustainability in the Air. Aviation is one of the hardest to decarbonize industries. Yet, there are multiple paths to get to net zero. Awareness is key to a green future. So please give us your support to help our sustainable aviation insights reach a wider audience. You can do this by sharing this episode on your network, on LinkedIn, Twitter, or even WhatsApp. Or perhaps you might consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this episode. You can start a conversation with us by writing to us at podcast@simplifying, that's simply with an i.com. And for more content on sustainable aviation, please visit our website green.simplifying.com and join the movement. Sustainability in the Air is an original podcast by Simplifying. The show is produced by Juraj Toth in Slovakia. Dirk Singer is our Director of Sustainability, who leads research for each interviewee out of Greenwich, UK. Shubhadeep Pal is our supervising editor based out of Mumbai and Singapore. The articles are written by Ayushi Badola in Dehradun in India and Meera Hull in Montreal, Quebec. Creative design is led by Ligia Esteve in Montreal. Baiba Dreamen is the project director for the show based out of Valencia, Spain. Special thanks to Wendy Sim in Singapore. And I'm Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simplifying and your host. Please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.